Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including watching your cat play with a ball of yarn. I am Daniel Winter.
Hello, I'm Mark Uessa.
How are you, Mark?
I am well. Yeah, I've got lots of games in recently, so I'm happy guy.
Excellent, excellent. It's an unusually wet spring here, even for Vancouver, so there's been plenty of time or plenty of excuse to be indoors playing games. So yeah, a few things we've got on the playlist today. So for those who may have missed the last episode, I guess we should just quickly run down the new structure in that we're splitting the podcast up now. So we'll still be releasing a featured review of a game that we've both played every 2 weeks, alternating between video game, board game, usually. That's the general structure. But we're now breaking out everything else, the news and other games we've been playing, into its own episode. That's the playlist that we'll be releasing on every other week. And that's what you're listening to right now. So, any news that you want to talk about this episode?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of news, but I'll talk about some stuff that I've been doing during the what you've been playing section, if that's all right.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, nothing major I wanted to mention. I was going to keep this relatively brief. We discussed last episode about some of the Microsoft layoffs and studio closures, and it does feel like lately there's each episode you can basically flip a coin as to whether there's going to be consolidation and layoffs in game development or in games media. And what do you know, this episode is, IGN have consolidated a bunch of outlets and in the same breath laid off a bunch of people. So that's been unfortunate. Don't want to belabor the point. It's just been a bit of a constant this last year or so. I just thought it's a good opportunity to reflect on, well, we were discussing last episode how we're trying to be more intentional about the games we play. And I think that counts also for the media coverage, the games coverage that we consume. So in happier news, a couple of new game announcements or releases. By the time you're listening to this, you should see on Kickstarter a new campaign from Amanda Vollerand, who was our guest quite recently on Let's Go to Japan episode. So her new game, Puppets in High Places, should be on Kickstarter right now, if you're listening to this around the time it releases. And so that is a continuation of one of her previous games, With a Smile and a Gun. And it's going to be a 1-2 player game, quite affordable from what I've heard it's going to be. And in the same universe, in being very focused on sort of mob bosses. Not a theme that's been covered a lot in board games, surprisingly.
I think our friends Jay Cormier and Sam Fung Ling did a Godfather game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah, there have been a couple sort of the licensed games like Godfather, yeah. And what's the HBO show?
Sopranos.
Is there a board game based on Sopranos?
Probably, yeah. There's also a really fun party game called I'm the Boss, I think.
Yes, yeah.
And what's that other one, that famous one? It's got like foam guns or something like that.
Cash and Guns?
Cash and Guns, that sounds
Yeah. No, I mean, there have been a few, but it feels like over in the last like 10 years ago, not recently, that it's not been a theme that's been hot. So
it's not overrepresented.
No. So that's go and check that out on Kickstarter.
Yeah, we'll try and share a link.
Yes, yeah, check the show notes for a link. One other quick release I noted is that Flatout Games have announced Knitting Circle. So this is a standalone follow-up to Calico, designed by Emily Vincent. There's not a lot of information yet. It's been announced. It's on BGG. We already have the cover illustration from Beth Sobel once again. So, you know, more cats, more cozy quilts. Or sorry, not quilts. Other garments. You're knitting other garments out of yarn is the theme here. So I don't know much more about that, but watch this space. That's probably an instant buy for me.
Right. It's another entry in the Calico Ludological game universe.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of which, I've just been playing a little bit of the digital version of Calico. I haven't got my claws into it quite enough yet. So maybe next episode I'll talk about that some more.
Very nice. See what you did there.
Okay. Shall we get to the playlist?
Yeah, let's do it.
Excellent. So what have you been playing lately?
Yeah, I'll start us off. I'll start us off with the A's. I've been playing a new entry on Xbox Game Pass. My subscription is still continuing for that. Another Crab's Treasure is an interesting title that's come out recently. It's a Souls-like. Gasp. There's plenty of Souls-like.
As I've heard many suggest.
But unlike most every other Souls-like I can think of, this one is bright, colorful, funny, cute, but it's still got, you know, tight as nails, action gameplay. It's a little bit floaty. It's a little bit loose. But I won't say much more about that because maybe we might be covering it in the future.
Okay. Yeah, I'm keen to check that out. My daughter loves crabs and crustaceans, so I'm going to be checking that out soon.
Yeah, lots of cute characters there. How about yourself? What have you been playing games-wise?
Well, I mentioned last episode that I've been playing Hades 2 and that I was looking to try it on controller. So just a quick update that I did try that and immediately beat the first boss on my next run. So it did flow a lot better on the console, sorry, on the controller. And just that, especially with Linoue being a lot squishier, movement is a lot more important, positioning. And I saw a friend was suggesting that mouse and keyboard is more useful for aiming, like when you're fine-tuning like ranged attacks. But that's not, like, movement and positioning is so much more crucial and not being close when the enemies hit. So I'm finding that a lot more streamlined and enjoying that quite a bit. I did hit the second boss, no spoilers as to what it is, but that was probably my favorite boss that I've seen in Hades so far. It's a really cool implementation of theme and music and... Yeah, not to spoil that, but that second boss is real good, and I've heard it gets better from there.
Very cool. I'm going to mention a game that I just started playing today. I've only played like half an hour of it, but this is a game I bought recently because it was on sale, and also my oldest kid and I have been looking for games to play together. It is also an action role-playing game, but this time it's co-op simultaneous, and it's called Children of Morta. I know it's been out for a while. And I think there's even like DLC packs and whatnot it. But I had never played it before. I think it was even on Game Pass before, but I had not tried it. But I picked it up. It's got beautiful pixel graphics, really like lush. You know, they're not simple flat sprites. Like they do a lot of like zooming way close in and then really far out.
It's a dynamic camera. Yeah.
Yeah. So the level of detail and like the kind of sheer amount of things going on in the screen, especially in the cinematic sequences, are really interesting. And it is a roguelite. You do bring back, you know, money on the way home, I guess similar to Hades 2.
Yeah, that was a game that definitely came to mind. Very similar structure and being a roguelike, but with a story that sort of keeps you focused and sort of moving forward.
Yeah, and it's cool how, I guess, like Hades, but maybe even a little bit stronger than Hades the original, that's all I have a point of reference to, is they push the narrative like really hard. Like there's like formalized cutscenes during the interludes when you're not playing in the runs, right? And you're back in town, you return to your family home because everyone is a member of the same family in that game. And I've just started it, but it already seems really intriguing. The action's pretty tight, and the two characters that I've unlocked so far play quite differently from each other. So I think my oldest kid and I are going to enjoy that.
Are you playing co-op?
Yeah, we started straight up from the co-op. Nice. And other than the first, like, maybe 10 minutes of a tutorial, pretty much as soon as you unlock the actual runs, you can play co-op.
Awesome. Yeah, I hadn't tried this one co-op, but I did play this a few years ago and beat it, and it left a really good impression in that it's a roguelike game, so it has the sort of randomized runs. It's going to be a little bit different each time, but it has a clear ending. It's not one of these roguelikes that you spend, like maybe about some other roguelikes we're going to discuss later, that you're playing for hundreds of runs and just play it until you've had enough, basically. Now, there is a clear ending, so you can get in, get out, and have feel like you had a satisfying experience without overstaying its welcome. And yeah, I think there's like half a dozen family members that you basically you switch between the various family members, unlocking them as the story progresses, and they all play quite differently. And you're unlocking new other features and sort of pets around the home, and sort of I really enjoy that sense of progression as you're building out that sort of central hub area. Right. So yeah, it's a really fun little game. And it may have just ended, I'm not sure, but there is a board game coming out. It was just on Kickstarter. And I believe actually from a local designer and publisher.
Right. Maybe there'll be a late packing option to check that out. I personally did not know much about Children of Morta other than the general positive attitude from the gaming public about it. And I'm delighted that I gave it a shot. And yeah, I'll go check out that campaign, see if there's anything of interest there. There you go.
So as for what I've been playing, I can't remember if I discussed this previously, but I borrowed Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown from the library, and I long story short, I got it back and was able to finish it over the last couple of weeks. I sort of marathoned through that, and so this is it came out at the start of this year, I think. So this is a 2D sort of Metroidvania, sort of the classic structure of these sort of 2D room, sort of open world map layout, but you're gated by various upgrades and abilities. One of the cooler things is here that those abilities are largely organic. So it's not like actual Metroid, where, oh, it's a red door. Go and find the gun that lets you shoot red doors. It's more that there's certain things you won't be able to reach. Like, oh, I can't jump high enough to reach up here, or it's a pit that's too wide for me to jump across. There must be, assumedly there'll be something later I should come back for this. And there's a pretty cool system where you can take photos, or like basically you press a button and it takes a photo, a screenshot, that also flags your map. So, okay, there's something of value here, whether it's a collectible I can't reach or looks to be a door, a sort of new area I can't access. Flag this and I can check out my minimap, come back later. It, for some reason, they do limit that. There is like, you can only have 10 of them at a time, and it's like a collectible upgrade to get more slots, which seems a bit redundant. It's like, why not just have unlimited ones of those? But I did find that to be quite useful in sort of remembering where you need to go, because it is quite a large sort of sprawling map. I don't know that it does anything particularly new in the sort of Metroidvania space. It feels very similar to Hollow Knight, especially in the broad structure and like the badges. I think Hollow Knight was not necessarily the first. They popularized this badge system. We have certain slots that you can custom. You have like a dozen different customizable little upgrades. Oh, your parries do more damage, or your arrows do more damage, and so you can really customize your character. But you've only got so many slots that you can do that with. So that's
another Crab's Treasure does exactly that.
Yeah, it's become very popular.
Very pleased to see that lifted that technique in there. That's cool. It's funny how popular Metroidvanias have become, right? Like it used to be a kind of lesser known genre, and now there's just so many kind of blockbuster titles in the Metroidvania genre. That probably people are much more familiar with those nowadays than the original Metroid or Castlevania that the genre is based on.
Yeah, because I mean, other than those, it's mostly been a lot of independent, sort of smaller titles that have, like Hollow Knight, for example, which obviously a lot of work went into that, but it was a cheaper game, for lack of a better term, and but with a much smaller team and scope. And a 2D game obviously helps a lot with that. But this is a triple A game with it's an Ubisoft $80 game. And I know obviously that doesn't mean anything. Like, this is as much a game as Hollow Knight. Cost, by no means do I think that's a statement of value, but it's perceived as a triple A big ticket title, obviously. And I don't know if this is doing anything particularly new. There's no new mechanics here other than it is a very stylish one of those. There's some really cool. It's a 2D field, but like 3D backgrounds. There's a lot of like beautiful backdrops and sort of layering you got there, but also a lot of like almost fighting game effects, both like cell shading effects with like the sword slashes and everything, and certain parries and combos will actually trigger like a little cutscene, like it's a fighting, like Hadouken, like special attack that you're doing, but very focused on like very finely tuned combat.
Yeah.
So I think a lot that of makes... dodging, parrying, like Hollow Knight.
The original Prince of Persia was by this designer of Karateka, right? Mm-hmm. which was like pre-Street Fighter martial combat game. So it doesn't surprise me that that sort of DNA is built into it, and they're kind of hearkening back to that generation of game design. No, it's cool to hear.
Yeah, no, so it's really finely tuned combat. It's quite visceral and can be quite difficult to say that. But it's one of those games where you first time you hit a boss, and you just die in the first phase. And okay, this is completely overpowered. I don't know how it's... like, obviously, this is just broken. Like, there's no way I can pick these attacks. But then two or three attempts later, everything just clicks into place. And it's also finely tuned. Oh, this is actually really good game design. So the way that it switches is quite interesting, that the bosses are all designed in such a way that they're unique, that you have to craft your attacks, or have to craft your strategy around very specific abilities. But it's not one of those... a lot of Metroidvanias sort of rely on the old, we'll just spend a minute dodging all the enemy's attacks, wait for the glowing spot to appear and shoot that. Yeah. So it's not doing that. They're all very unique things that have to be countered in very unique ways. But
it's the ye olde Nintendo boss battle design school of game design. Yeah, I totally know what you mean.
Yeah, no, I just found that sort of every time I hit a boss, I went through that same arc of eventually coming around. Oh, that's actually, once you click and get the trick to it, really satisfying boss and combat design here.
Nice, really cool. Okay, I'm going to mention another game really quickly because I haven't played much of it. Because the sequel is out, I started to play the original Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, I believe it's called. Never played it. I know it was pretty well regarded. And I think both of the games are actually relatively short.
Yes.
Senua's Sacrifice, Hellblade, the original, and then the latest game that just came out, Senua's... what is it called?
Senua's Saga, I think.
Senua's Saga, that's right. Yeah, so I don't have much to say about them, except that they're very atmospheric, let's just say. The first one certainly is. So that's all I'll say. No opinion yet. Seems intriguing.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot about the first one. Other than, like, it is very a bit of a walking simulator with some token combat in there. And I've listening to some discussions around the second one, and where there is still combat. And by most accounts, that's like the weakest element of the game. And it's interesting to hear some reviewers say, "Oh, I wish this game just didn't have combat." And then you're basically going to end up in a position similar to Harold Halibut, where it's basically just a walking through the game, experiencing the story,
right.
And it's interesting to hear people sort of push back in the opposite direction. Yeah. There,
I think even in the original Hellblade 1, I think you can tune down the difficulty like straight up. I think they just give you an option
just to become like quick time events, basically.
Yeah, or just like press A to succeed, sort of thing.
Yeah,
like I think that exists. I mean, I am personally all for that. I'm all for accessibility tools, difficulty tools, because you don't know why people play games, right? People play games for lots of different reasons. A lot of people, it's just to see cool visuals or to see an interesting story. So I'm not going to hold it against someone.
Take away from your enjoyment how someone else plays a game. So
yeah, exactly. So I'm all for that. But I've yet to dig deep into that, so I don't have a strong opinion, except to say, once again, intriguing.
Yeah, I'm expecting to check that out in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I'm going to quickly mention another game that I just lightly touched upon just for like maybe 30 minutes. There's this big Warhammer franchise sale going on across all the platforms. It's on Steam, it's on whatever, Epic, it's on Xbox. And, you know, I have a bunch of these games. But, you know, I checked out the list nonetheless. I was particularly interested in this title called Rogue Trader. It came out around the same time as Baldur's Gate 3, so I don't think it caught a lot of the same buzz. It's overshadowed by the breakout success of Baldur's Gate 3. But Rogue Trader is by notable CRPG developer Alcat, I believe their name is.
Yeah,
Speaking of
Baldur's Gate, which I think I discussed those Pathfinder games recently, and I quite enjoyed those.
Yeah, I own a couple of them, but I don't have a long history with them. There's just so many like modern, quote unquote, modern CRPGs with games like
Pillars of Eternity.
Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2. Yeah.
P of E. I had it.
Yeah. Right. And I played that Tides of Numenera game, which was fantastic as well. So they're just like 100-hour, they're all 100-hour games.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But I was particularly interested in Rogue Trader because it's sci-fi. But I kind of have a love-hate relationship with Warhammer. It just seems like everyone in Warhammer is a bad guy, right? And like the people who love Warhammer. Yeah, the people who love Warhammer know that, right? Everyone's like...
Oh, space, some of them do.
Yeah, there's space fascists, space, I don't know, cults, or space pirates, or space dictators. Space
bandits, yeah.
Or space Amazons, or whatever. Hmm. Everyone's just a brutal, brutal person. But I noticed that Xbox Game Pass happened to have this and a couple of other titles on their free play days. So basically, free play days is another benefit of Xbox Game Pass. You get to play a handful of titles, just no holds barred. Like, you get full access to the game. It's not a demo. But the only stipulation is it's limited to a few days. Not our listeners, but someone else could have had access to it for, like, better part of a week. It could have beaten the game, really.
Enough to know if you like it, basically.
Yeah, I personally just wanted a taste. I played it on Xbox. The story was intriguing. The character creation was intriguing. And the direction of the story was, like, different than I thought it would be. So I bit the bullet and bought the game full retail, or half price, I guess, on Steam. And I'm excited to play some more. It plays great on my Lenovo Legion Go. It's on GeForce Now as well. So I'm excited to play more of that. It's supposedly super deep in another 100-plus hour game with lots of character customization and lots of nods to the deep, deep Warhammer 40K lore.
How is it as an introduction to that lore? Because that's another intimidating part of Warhammer. It's just like,
totally.
How much do I need to know?
I know very little about Warhammer other than that there's like a few different flavors, right? There's fantasy ones, and there's even multiple fantasy flavors of Warhammer. And then Warhammer 40K is, of course, the standard sci-fi version of that. And Rogue Trader is like a sub-genre of that. There's actually a big Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader RPG book series from Fantasy Flight Games, of all people. So I never played that, but I know that exists. I know it has huge lore. The one cool thing this game does is it actually has a built-in dictionary.
Oh.
Which I've never seen in a CRPG before, and I think it's a fantastic idea. I think I've heard that they do this in Final Fantasy 16. So they have an in-context kind of lore guide. So whenever side character says, "Oh, hello, my lord. Did you know that the Cadaverian Empire is attacking our allies, the Brixillians," or whatever, you're like, "Who the hell are those guys? I don't know who that is. Who the hell? Who am I?" Right? In this game, in Rogue Trader, whenever you hear like a proper noun, essentially, you can press a button and highlight it in this quick text entry, like this Wikipedia entry will come up for whatever that is and be like, "This is like a kind of a Dune Mentat," right? And I'll be like, "Oh, I get it. They're giving you the Coles notes. They're giving you the dummy cliff notes for this lore that's been around for decades."
Yeah, a lot of proper nouns in Warhammer. Pentiment actually did something similar to that. It was dealing with actual like real life history. So actual education there as well.
Yeah. So I think that's fantastic. That's another accessibility tool. That's a tool that lets me, a neophyte, jump into this lore that's been around for a long time. And it doesn't make it welcomes me in, and it makes me feel like, oh, there's no like gates being kept barred, you know, for me. So I really like that.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah, I've been keeping an eye on a couple of the Warhammer games, like Demon Hunter Chaos Gate is a tactics game that I've been wanting to check out. A lot of Warhammer out there. That license is wide open.
Yeah, there's so much Warhammer, and half of those games are great, and half of those games are horrible, and a lot of them are on sale right now for like dirt cheap.
Darktide is actually one I've quite enjoyed. It's a sort of Left 4 Dead cooperative shooter that had some really, it was a really just gorgeous game, lighting and the level design wise. Only got a couple of levels in. It was very hard for what it's worth.
I actually have experience playing that with you, and some pals from our Discord, actually. So that one, it was pretty fun. And there's even a board game version of Darktide specifically.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe I'll have to check that out at some point.
Yeah, that's it all. Okay, is that it for video games?
That's it for me.
Excellent. I'll just quickly mention one board game that I've been playing, and that is Darwin's Journey. So I just got this in from Kickstarter a couple of weeks ago, and it is it's from the Italian Masters. I can't remember which two, because the problem with the Italian Masters is always two of them in every game, and they mix and match, like they hot swap for any particular game. But this is it's a worker placement game, but it's a bit of a chimera of other sort of mini game elements as well, and that you've got workers that you're upgrading. So basically you can each worker has these colored seals, like I've got the deluxe edition, so these little rubber stamps basically that you're slotting into each worker, and that indicates what kind of actions they can go to. So it's just like a really cool customization feature of being able to upgrade your workers over the course of the game, some differentiation from each other. And there's also a lot of mini games in terms of like tracks to move up, sort of thematic tracks. So like actual boats sailing along a route, and or explorers walking around an island along a track, but they diverge in some interesting ways. And so, yeah, I've been really enjoying it. I did play it two and four players. And it definitely feels like more players are the better, in that it's one of those games where there's not a lot of direct interaction. It's largely from like inadvertently blocking each other, right? Or sort of just shifting the board states. It really feels like a sort of an evolving ecosystem for, pun intended, for the theme, in that it's just changing turn to turn, whether intended or otherwise. And so you really have to be reactive in how you move around the board and choose things. It has this really interesting mechanic where at the start of the game, only a few sort of worker spaces are available, and you have to actually invest in unlocking them. So is this like one of the worker spaces you can go to lets you unlock other worker spaces for everyone, and from that point forward, if someone else goes to a place that you've unlocked, you get a little bonus. And so it does have a really cool sense of sort of these blooming options expanding as the game goes on, and it's going to be very different game by game. Like there's actually randomized which tiles are even available each game, so there might be a completely different variety. So yeah, I'm enjoying that. I do want to play it at three. I think at four it felt a little two players was too open-ended and four players was too tight. So I'm curious to try it at three. That I feel like it might be the sweet spot. But really cool sort of thematic implementations of various games. It did feel like a bit of a chimera of other games. Just a very direct comparisons. Like Maracaibo came to mind for the sort of tracks you're moving along, and very Barrage-like scoring system, which it's one of the same designers as Barrage. And Lisboa was another one that was mentioned. I've not played that. But it's one where the inspirations are very clear. But it's sort of pulling together ideas from a bunch of different games in some really interesting ways.
Yeah, I gotta say, I don't have a lot of familiarity with those, except from afar. They look intriguing, but complicated. And of course, it's always difficult to find the time. But yeah, if you pull it out, I will definitely give it a shot.
Yeah, and just to be clear, this was designed by Simone Luciani and Nestor Mengone. So Simone Luciani was one of the two designers on Barrage, which is a favorite of mine. So yeah, I should say it's actually a fair bit more lenient than Barrage. Barrage is famously quite punishing. This is a little more open-ended, especially once you start unlocking those other worker spaces. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. What have you been playing?
Yeah, I actually haven't been on playing a lot of this side, but you know that I'm into tabletop role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
But related to that, I've been delving into the even deeper, darker depths of tabletop.
Going too far.
Deeper and darker for me, but obviously a very, very popular and burgeoning area for a lot of people. I've been delving into tabletop war games, or in this case, skirmish games. And there's a subgenre of tabletop war games that was very interesting to me, is adventure wargaming. So adventure wargaming is very similar to like a TTRPG in that there's like a dedicated like campaign. So most war games that I was familiar with from just orbiting around it for so many years was just the sort of the one-off, I have an army, you have an army, let's fight.
Warhammer.
Right. Warhammer, very much like there's no continuity, right? There's lore, but there's no like long arching story. Right. So adventure wargaming is the other direction of that. It blends war games and RPGs. So there's like campaigns, there's character growth, there's different scenarios. So it's not full hardcore TTRPG where you're controlling like basically one character. You do have a squad, but you develop your squad over time. And maybe it's a squad of like, you know, sci-fi people. And then you might be investing in your spaceship or something like that and growing, and you go to different areas. And then the opponent that you play with, maybe they're the rival gang of space mercenaries, right? And you're trying to attack the same kind of derelict ship. And then you both get like raided by like a third party at the same time. So you have like the difficult decision to make. Do you fight each other and kill each other off? Do you cooperate to fend off the third party? Like say, I'm humans, you're humans, plus friendly aliens. And then we get attacked by the xenomorphs. Or the predators, or the Zerg, right? So you have these sort of interesting choices to make, and all of that just sounds super exciting to me as a lifelong sci-fi fan, a fan of RPGs, and a fan of just tactics games. So I purchased myself a physical copy of this title. It's a solo adventure war game called 5 Parsecs from Home, and it's been around for a few years. And this third edition is the first printed edition, and it's from our friends at Modiphius, who make the Fallout 2D20 RPG.
Yes, yeah. So, I've actually been trying to hunt this down. I can't remember where I was put onto it. It might have been when I was looking into Fallout, but I've heard very good things about it. I've been trying to track down a copy.
Yeah, I was intrigued as well. I didn't know much, but I knew that it was highly regarded. And it just, you know, it's just like a really smartly laid out book. It's got like custom artwork. It's got like cool weapons, and basically you can ask for in any fun RPG story, and it's entirely soloable. So this is a great thing you can play, or it's co-op as well.
Okay, cool.
Of course, you can split up a party of fighters. And the brilliant thing about these new systems that I'm learning all about, this whole new world I'm learning about, is that they're minis agnostic. So unlike Infinity or Warhammer, or War Machine or something like that, or Malifaux, you don't have to buy into this box from this publisher. You can bring any old minis you want to. You could even play with, I know some people on Facebook or whatever are using like Lego figures, minifigs.
But as tokens.
As tokens, because you just need to have like, this guy's a, you know, a human bounty hunter, and this guy's like a lizard man engineer or something like that, right?
So how much of this game is taking place on the actual map layer versus that sort of the meta RPG layer?
Yeah, I haven't played
it
a lot.
Is it sort of like backdrop, like upkeep and sort of journaling or anything else like in between? Or
There is, but I think it's mostly playing out on the battlefield.
Okay.
Because it's adventure wargaming. Like wargaming is still at the core. It's not like a solo CRPG like Vampire Diary of a Thousand Year Vampire or something like that. It's not so much like that. Like there's just definitely rolling dice, there's definitely tactics, and there's definitely some pew pew action. I think it would probably be closer to something like, what is it? Scum and Villainy.
Okay.
Right, which I've talked about here and there. Like you have a mission, you complete it, and then once the mission's over, you go back to your spaceship and then you upgrade it. You re-equip your guys, you upgrade your team, and that sort of stuff. It's like the do the main stuff quite a lot like a roguelike. Do the main action and then come back to your safe zone and then upgrade your stuff sort of loop. So I'm very excited about that. It's opening up new opportunities to me, a whole new world of stuff. And I'll just mention a couple of other things. Not that I've experienced this, but I'm learning about a whole new essentially open source wargaming rule set called One Page Rules. They have a fantasy version. I think it's called Age of Warfare or something like that. And then they have a fantasy version called Grim Dark Future. Both of these have a smaller skirmish version. So there's a fantasy skirmish, and then there's a sci-fi skirmish. Sci-fi one is called Grim Dark Future Firefight. And these are essentially like open source equivalents of Warhammer and then like Kill Team, for instance. Mm. And they even have a naval combat one, which is similar to that space battles system that Warhammer also has. Mm-hmm. Games Workshop also has. So it's basically like anyone can create models for these. They put out the rules for free. Mm. Anyone can go find one-page rules. And they've encouraged indie model designers, miniatures designers, to sell STL files, 3D printer file packs for these armies that are tuned to be this faction from this open source game.
Yeah, I know there's no shortage of sort of Kickstarters for STL files for terrain and miniatures and everything. It's sort of flooding the tabletop category.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And there's these whole websites built up for it. I think one of them is called like My Minis Factory or something like that. And you can sign up for these Patreons where you get like a different army set per month.
Wow.
I've actually signed up for a Patreon for like a cyberpunk style set of minis. So I'm really excited. My friend Paul, who is the GM for my D&D group, has a 3D printer. He's an avid 3D printer and model painter. So he's offered to print some up for me, give me some pointers in the ways of 3D minis painting. And I'm just really excited. I feel like a kid again. This is a whole new world. Even if it's just a flash in the pan, I figure this is a hobby that my oldest kid and I could pick up and play together.
You can always play by yourself. I know you were asking about some recommendations for the miniatures to use with 5 Parsecs from home. So if anyone listening has any recommendations for that, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. One last thing is I discovered this game called Core Space. It's a sci-fi themed skirmish game in its own right, but it's from this existing company called I think it's called Battle Systems. Okay. And they started out, they're a UK company, they started out as a terrain maker. So they make this beautiful, essentially paper craft, like really high quality full color printed cardboard kind of fitted terrain that's modular, reusable, really, really high quality stuff. Battle Systems. I bought the core set of their game Core Space, which is well regarded. It's an 8.6 on BGG, I think.
Interesting.
So really highly rated. Just for basically the terrain, comes with its whole rule set. It comes with a set of minis. And then now the Halo tactical war game is coming out.
Interesting.
Okay. So that's really an exciting entry point if anyone's interested. It's a really exciting time to get into tabletop skirmish games. I'm really excited to learn more. And I hope it will kind of sort of extend my interest in tabletop role-playing games. These are all just cousins of each other, right?
Yeah. Board games, yeah. I know RPGs, I've struggled a little bit with sort of TTRPGs in terms of having to bring a little more sort of improvisation and imagination to the table, whereas wargaming is obviously a lot more structured. And especially, like, I think that's what kind of pulled me to 5 Parsecs, especially, in that it has some story elements there, but also a lot more structured than a general, regular TTRPG. So yeah, if anyone has any recommendations for those, let us know.
Absolutely.
And I think that's going to be about it for today.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, we're going to be talking about our main episode review of the game Binding of Isaac, Four Souls, next week on YouTube and on podcast. And this will be it for our playlist session.
Yeah, so if you have any questions or comments, you can join the club at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at omnigamers.club.
That's right. We're always happy to hear your feedback. We want to know if you've played the games that we're playing as well, or if you have any recommendations for future games, or if you have a game you want to promote. Maybe you're local to where we are in the west coast of Canada here, or we're just happy to hear from you no matter what your game interests are.
Absolutely. Thank you, and enjoy a balanced gaming diet.
That's right. Talk to y'all soon. Bye.